Welcome to Katie's Crib, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
So right after that happened, you got me on my side and it was taking a little bit of time for the epidural to really take. I was having a lot of pain in one hip. And then Rebecca, the pain subsided and Rebecca put me in something I will never forget. You put me in something called goddess pose. Explain what that is.
It's actually throne position. Oh.
Yeah, I will never forget it. I'll never forget exactly what it was called.
You guys, thank you so much for coming back to Katie's Crib. This is a very, very exciting episode. I have two of the greatest loves of my life here for you today. I thought, how could we go into season four of Katie's Crib and not give you Vera Shapiro's birth story?
What?
And who else but the two people who were in the room with me, my husband, Adam Shapiro.
What?
Let's all give a nice round of applause. And then also the doula that you know and love from season one. I think the first episode of Katie's Crib. I think. The one,
absolutely,
the only, Rebecca Beninati is here. And let me just tell you very quickly, I'm not giving Adam Shapiro's credits. You can look him up on IMDb or shappypretzel.com. But Rebecca Beninati has been in the business of health and fitness since 1992. Wow. Gosh, Rebecca, you look amazing. I can't. She has an extensive experience in yoga, personal training, massage, aromatherapy, meditation. Rebecca's a certified doula. She's studied with Doulas of North America, international approved doula trainers Anna Paula Markell and Judy Chapman. She currently teaches the comfort measures segment at doula trainings at Beanie Birth in Sherman Oaks. She's also a wellness advocate for doTERRA essential oils, which is the greatest. She's the mother of two. There's just no one word to define what you are to my family's life. So thank you for being on Katie's Crib.
Oh,
and guys,
goodness.
Hi.
I second all of that.
Oh, thank you.
Do you guys even remember Vera's birth? Because she's 4 months old and it's gone.
Don't remember a thing.
It was so beautiful. Don't get me wrong. It was literally the greatest day of my life. But it was boring in terms of anything traumatic or something that might stick out when you're in the birthing season that Rebecca's currently in.
But also, we were right before the first holiday at the end of the pandemic
year.
Yes. Yeah. You had a lot of worry and concern about how the holidays were going to go because your family was coming.
Yes.
So there was really... there was a lot to keep me personally from not remembering all the details, because for me, the birth itself was what it was, but it was everything leading up to it.
It was awful.
The pandemic and what you were going through and what you were experiencing.
Anxiety.
That's what I really remember.
Yeah.
And so I think this is actually going to be very healing to talk about this, because as you both know, I've been wanting to have this conversation for a while about her birth so we could connect. This is our postpartum visit.
Yeah. Okay. So when you have a doula, you also, a lot of people as part of the package, you get a postpartum visit where you really like assess and go through how the birth was for you and all of that. And me, Adam and Rebecca have not yet had time to schedule ours, so you guys are all getting to hear it in real time.
Yeah.
Let's start with you, Adam. How was the pregnancy for you?
Wow. I don't know. It was weird. I guess, I was one of the lucky few baby daddies to be able to spend 24/7 with my wife for her entire pregnancy. I mean, how many guys can say that, right? I didn't go on a trip for business, nothing. So I got to see the entire pregnancy. It was a lot. It was a lot to handle. I think we were both very freaked out about the pandemic and how it was going to, if I get the virus and give it to Katie, and then if she gives it to the baby, we still don't really know exactly all the details behind that.
Well, we do. We know that babies are mostly fine, thank God, knock on wood. I mean, none of us are doctors, so don't quote us. But what we didn't know is Adam and I got pregnant around March 8th, so literally a week before shutdown. And what was scary about finding out that we were pregnant so early on in the pandemic was, yes, to your thoughts, Adam, was that no one knew how COVID affected pregnant women. No one knew how COVID affected fetuses early on, or how it could affect the pregnancy, what drugs you could take if you got it. Was the baby safe in the womb? I mean, it was total fear and anxiety. And Adam, really, you were the rock, I would say, because you were not as scared as I was. You weren't dealing with the chemical and hormonal imbalances of pregnancy.
That's true. So I get that would be the name of the game for this pregnancy for me, was just basically being there for you. I don't know what else I would do, even if it wasn't a pandemic. That's probably my job. But this was a 24/7 gig.
And amidst navigating the pregnancy during a pandemic, you also were figuring out how to have your toddler home every single day, all day, nowhere, no outlets for his energy. So Adam is definitely, you were definitely the rock in this pregnancy, the way you were holding it all down for hormones and toddlers and starting your business and all the things that were going on in your household. It's amazing what you did.
Well, thank
yes.
you.
Yeah.
Also, to everyone who's listening who doesn't know, Adam started a pretzel business during the pandemic called Shappy Pretzel.
It's still funny to even hear that sentence. Adam started a pretzel business during the pandemic.
It's like Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled
pretzels. Yeah, right.
It really is. It's a pretzel pop-up. It's a pandemic pretzel pop-up.
So he was really also having this incredible joyous thing happening during the pandemic,
yes,
where I was feeling very isolated, feeling very anxious about getting sick, feeling very anxious about having Albie, who's a challenging toddler, home and not able to go to school and not able to go to jungle gyms and all that stuff. Adam was off doing pretzels in a safe way, but we were having different pandemic experiences.
That's
and then
sure.
Rebecca, how would you explain my pregnancy phone calls, texts, FaceTime freakouts to you during the pandemic?
I remember the first call I got was from Adam. It was a text saying, "Can I talk to you?"
And, right.
And yeah, that was the start of it. And that's when I knew, oh, Katie might be pregnant. So sure enough, Adam and I got on the phone and he said, "We're pregnant and Katie's really freaking out." Not necessarily about the pregnancy at all, but because we were in the beginnings of the pandemic. So that was really the start of all the phone calls, was that first phone call I had with you. You were letting me know that you were freaking out, you were nervous, you were anxious, and we were all trying to figure out what we were supposed to be doing to be safe. All the rest of the text messages, aside from doing prenatal yoga with me and being able to see you on camera, knowing that you were actually okay and doing something to take care of yourself, the text messages and phone calls were very anxiety-ridden. That was the one word that I would use in all honesty and out of
Please.
Respect for what you went through. You were super anxious.
I wanted to ask, Adam, was there anything that you struggled with around Vera's birth? Like having Albie by yourself and trying to cover for me when I was having anxiety attacks?
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for me was when we were pregnant with Albie, it was just the two of us. And this was a completely different thing where I had to keep Albie entertained and away from you when you were feeling really low, which was a lot of the time. And so I think that was probably the most challenging thing for me, was handling Albie during this whole thing. But some really cool things came out of that, because we cooked a lot and I was cooking so much I had to involve Albie, and we got like a stool for him to stand on while he cooks, and I got little kids cooking things, and that's what inspired me to make a soft pretzel for Albie. And then that turned into a company. And not to mention, you know, for the first 40 days of your pregnancy, I think I set a goal to make a little movie with Albie every day. I was just trying to find ways of involving Albie in things that I was going to enjoy doing as well, and not just do like Albie kid activities, make movies, make meals and things like that. That was probably the most challenging part about it all. And then not being around people, to have done all of this in quarantine was the hardest thing. So that was and I'm just personally learning how to ask for help when I need it. That's just been such a huge thing for me in my life. And luckily, Rebecca's like the easiest person to ask for help. It's, you know, you don't feel awkward. And I know that I can text her like I did in the beginning, just saying, "Hey, I need to talk to you." And she's like, "Give me 2 minutes and then I'll give you from midnight till 6 a.m. You know what I mean? Like whatever you need. So she and I got to talk in the middle of the night while you were sleep crying. And we were in the kitchen having that conversation. And I think that was huge.
I remember giving Adam a FaceTime lesson in how to do Reiki on you to get you super calm and relaxed one night. And again, Adam stepped right in and right up and was like, what am I doing? What is this called? And I said, don't, just put your hands here and leave them there.
Am I a Reiki master now?
Not quite yet. Almost. But you nailed it.
It's interesting because technology can fuck with the vibe of what you're trying to do, especially what Rebecca does with pregnancy and yoga. And there's a screen and it's bright. And she coached me through before even walking into the room with you, Katie, like how to turn the lights off, dim my phone down, put the phone somewhere that wasn't in your eyes, and that she was just going to give me physical thumbs up.
And also what was amazing is that you didn't even ask questions. You just did exactly what I asked you to do. And I was so willing to, of course, jump over with masks on and do whatever I needed to do to do the Reiki myself. But we were all too scared and we couldn't. We weren't supposed to be around each other at all. Even playing the edge like that felt scary to me to offer to do that. But it was such a desperate thing that I needed to have happen for you.
I really think looking back, whatever chemical hormonal imbalances were happening with me, plus the pandemic, plus the isolation, plus the toddler at home, was just a very perfect storm. I was not handling it well. And I FaceTimed Rebecca that night and I said, I'm doing really badly. I want to check myself into Cedars now. I can't do this anymore. I can't be pregnant anymore. I'm so scared that something's going to happen to me or the baby. And I'm so scared of being home all the time and not seeing people. And, you talked me out of like, don't check into the hospital. Nothing is wrong. Adam can put his hand on your chest and we're going to have lavender scent on his hands and you're going to breathe in and Adam's going to put his hands here. And I sobbed. Adam, have you ever seen me sob like that?
Just the week before we were going to open on Broadway. I think that was the only other time that I had to talk you off of checking yourself into a hospital.
So true. Jeez Louise. Okay, for context, just we opened on Broadway and they gave us 7 days of rehearsal to sing and dance across a Broadway stage and our entire family and friends were flying in to see us perform and we had never done a run of the show, not once. I hadn't sang and danced in front of people in 15 years. Anyway, yeah, that was another meltdown. Okay, so those two.
And also,
are you adding another one?
Well, we were both opening on Broadway that same night, so I couldn't be there for you. So that was a very different conversation that we had, which was like, Katie, you got to get your shit together. I don't have time for this. We're doing this together. I'm going to be on the stage with you. So if I have to improv the rest of the musical, I can do that. But I need you to like hold it together until we get up on that stage. This one was a very different situation where we were not both having a baby and I could be there for you 24/7 because I was literally home doing nothing for the entire first 6 months of your pregnancy. So that was a unique experience for sure. I had not seen you like that.
Oh,
yeah. It was the most amount of crying that I have experienced, I have to say, because the anxiety was that high. I want to highlight that for a moment, because for women who cry through their entire pregnancies, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. You don't hear of it very often. And this is something that's so important to get out, is that oftentimes when we're talking about pregnancy, people elaborate on the one thing that was really hard for them. And then it sounds just like you're highlighting the thing that was really hard for you and not really giving it the credit that it actually deserves, because this was real. This was not being fabricated. This was not stretched out to make it dramatic and make it sound like, oh, I cried every day. You literally cried every day. You were anxious the entire time.
I really, really struggled this pregnancy, and a huge regret I have now that I've been on the other side and got diagnosed with postpartum depression and anxiety and seek help. I've heard this from so many other women now, which is they all wish they had gotten help sooner. And look, it happened how it was supposed to happen. But for anyone listening who is feeling major anxiety during their pregnancy for whatever reason, or major sadness during their pregnancy for whatever reason, you can talk to your OB, to a therapist or a doula or whatever, and start to really figure out and make sure that you're taking care of yourself. Because I don't think I had to have struggled like that.
No.
Now that I know.
I think if it wasn't a pandemic, you would have been out there. I just think it was the combination of being so scared of leaving the house and getting the virus mm-hmm. that you didn't feel like you had that option of getting together with people and talking about this. And so you just decided to kind of isolate and just get through it.
But also, it's just to paint the setting. I mean, Los Angeles in this time, there were 40,000 cases a day. Yeah. At one. I mean, I was literally reading an article, which again, I stopped reading all the news, but there was an article that was like, if you are stepping out of your house, you are putting yourself in danger.
There was a little election going on too.
There was a little election going on. I mean, it was fucking high stress. Like, But you feel bad admitting that in all honesty, because I know there are people who are pregnant listening to this or have been through pregnancy who had and suffered far more with far less than I have been very privileged to have. So I definitely also felt bad because I'm like, why am I feeling this way? I have a roof over my head. I have my health. I have food. I have love. I have family support and friends. Like there are people, you can't help but think of all the women who come before you that have nothing, you know, and have no system of support, both financially, mentally, physically. And I would constantly feel bad. Like, why do I feel this anxious and this scared and this sad when I'm safe and I'm okay? But sometimes during pregnancy and post-pregnancy, it's not rational.
It's not rational.
Can you speak to that a little bit, Rebecca?
Well, that's the first thing I was going to interrupt with is to say it's not rational, but we don't know that because it feels really real. And that's where you do have to reach out as hard as it is to ask for help. There's just nothing to do to make sense of that because it doesn't make sense, but yet it feels like it makes sense. And it can then start to make you feel crazy. And then it starts to affect everybody around you, your other children, your husband, any other work things you have going on. And so it is, I think this is the other great thing. I feel like I'm highlighting Adam a lot in this podcast episode, but seriously, this is where Adam again was so incredible. When it did feel like it was spiraling out and he couldn't do anything else, he would reach out to me and I would give him one thing to do or one thing to say or suggest some idea of something random. And we already knew that you were seeing a therapist, so you did have that support already.
Yeah, for sure.
And your doctor, you have a great relationship with your doctor. So aside from that professional help that you were already getting, what was left for me to do as your doula and your friend was to support Adam because he had to keep going to support you, but also to do what you did, which was to make sure that you were getting any time outside in the sun in your backyard, getting some fresh air, some vitamin D, making sure that you were eating. And these were all things I didn't even want to ask you because I didn't want any more overwhelm on you at all after you even gave birth. I really felt so protective of you because of the amount of anxiety you had to the point of me not sharing things with you personally that I would typically share with both of you, but such protection because of the amount of anxiety it was.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What a shit show. Oh my God.
There were so many things that happened during this pregnancy that were so anxiety inducing. And like, I remember.
Like what?
During the pregnancy where you and I wanted to go out and protest with Black Lives Matter. We wanted to go and join the protest. They were right outside of our house. And we had to have a conversation of like, what if we go to the protest and we get the virus? Or what if we go to the protest and the police open up fire on us with like rubber bullets? We can't put you in that position as a pregnant woman, but we were feeling like super terrible about not going out there. That's an actual conversation that we had during your pregnancy. Like it was just so many levels and it felt like every month came in some sort of new challenge to navigate. And a lot of times our answer was, let's just stay home. And I, you know, that had its own issues.
What's so crazy about this and hearing about how stressful and anxious I was this entire pregnancy. My rocks were Rebecca and Adam. And honestly, that prenatal yoga class, it's like being in my body felt really good and felt like a nice break that I always allowed myself no matter what. The birth itself, which I want to get into now, was magic. And that's what no one saw coming. A few days before the birth, I was in Rebecca's yoga class. And at the beginning of the yoga class, a lot of the moms go around and share. And I started sobbing because I said, I am so terrified of this birth. 2020 has been a record-breaking year in terms of dumpster fires, shit storms for the world. And I'm really scared that I'm going to go into this birth and we're not going to see something terrible coming.
Well, and with Albie, the Las Vegas massacre happened during his birth. We were so ready for like, okay, well, you know, even if we make it to the hospital with nothing, like what's going to happen? What text message are we going to get?
Every left turn, something so sad and horrible is happening. And like, how am I going to skirt that? Of course, something's going to get fucked up. And here's what I didn't see coming. My birth was easier, lovelier, shorter. Like, I already had a magical, wonderful, the birth I wanted with my son. And I feel so blessed to say that because I think there are a lot of women that don't get to say that. And I was like, I don't feel like I'm lucky enough to get that again. Guys, I got that again with fucking flying colors. Like, my birth with Vera was so wonderful. It was an induction again. I had such a great experience with Albie inducing that I chose to induce Vera.
You had a very clear vision at that point. When you knew you were getting close and you had decided that you wanted the induction, your vision, and I really believe that what women say as an affirmation or as a mantra or just something to support themselves to get through to the day of labor and delivery, whatever they say can often manifest. And you were saying, do you remember what you were saying over and over?
What was I saying?
You were saying, I just want to be holding my daughter at the Thanksgiving dinner table with my family. That you said that so many times near the end.
Her due date was Thanksgiving Day. So my options were, they weren't going to let me go much more than my due date because I'm an old hag. But
geriatric.
I'm a geriatric pregnancy. So they weren't going to let me go. And her due date was the 26th. My parents were here and my brother and Meg, and that was my pod. And I was like, I'm either going to spend Thanksgiving at Cedars and have Rebecca work and my pediatrician work and my OB work, or I'm going to induce a few days before. I'm going to be home. All I wanted was a fucking sweet potato pie with fucking marshmallows all over it. My daughter breastfeeding at my boob and my family. Like, I just wanted to be home. I didn't want to be in a hospital during COVID. And so that was really, you're right. That was the mantra I was saying. And that was really my reason for inducing. I don't know if I would have made that choice had I not had a great experience inducing Albie, but I did. The difference here is that I had even less of an induction augmentation because when I showed up at the hospital, I had a 10 p.m. appointment slot at Cedars. I was already 4 centimeters dilated and contractions were 1 to 2 minutes apart and I didn't even know.
And you were 70% effaced, right?
And I was 70% effaced! Now, I think that happened because the day before, Adam shut down pretzels, which I was like, way to just shut down pretzels the day before the induction date. I was like, are you going to take off a few days before the induction? And he was like, no. I'm going to be like working pretzels like less than 24 hours to the induction time. Right, Adam?
Yeah. It was anything to get me out of the house, you know, whether that was pretzels or just helping someone move into an apartment or driving multiple people to the airport. I would have pretty much done anything to stay just a healthy distance away from you during those couple days and just on text and ready for you, but trying to keep my energy as positive and as flowing as possible because it was a dark household during those days. And I wanted to make sure that I just needed to be there to help you. When you're feeling sad, I feel really sad. And so I felt like it was really important to keep my mojo going so I could be really positive and strong for you. Although it might sound like I was just trying to stay away from you. I think it was a very...
Hey, whatever you needed, it worked.
No,
whatever
it was a very needed, conscious effort that I was worked. Like, I don't want to stop everything days before the birth. I kind of want to keep the flow going.
The pretzel was his joy.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
And that's why the business, guys, shappypretzel.com. anywho, the minute you pulled in and Shappy Pretzel was done at 6 p.m. on Friday before the induction date, my mucus plug came out, which never happened with Albie. And I was like, what the hell is that? And it's literally like when you Google image mucus plug, it was like a bloody booger.
By the way,
don't
the Google image mucus plug.
Do it. And I texted Rebecca and she's like, oh my God, this is great. Your body's doing it. And every time I peed, there was like a little bit like that brown sort of spotty blood that would be like the end of a period or something. Adam, this is where Katie's Crib really, really gets into it.
I listened to it.
I know. So the mucus plug is out. And I'm like, oh my God, I have an induction day tomorrow, but my body's sort of doing it anyway. And I felt like garbage. And I was like, this feels right. I had this thing called the salad at Coyote Restaurant on Tujunga, which is this famous salad in LA that really says that if you have the salad and you will go into labor within 24 hours. I did have the salad the day before, and I'm convinced it's because castor oil is in the dressing.
Right? Yeah. Yes, it is the castor oil and balsamic vinegar combination. Yeah. Doesn't work for everybody, but it seemed to have helped you for sure.
So mucus plug, show up to the 10 p.m. induction. They do the COVID test. They do the HEPLOCK. They say, oh my God, I thought I was going to get the Foley balloon again, which is a lovely device I had with Albie, which is a nice sort of circus animal balloon that they shove into your vagina and they blow it up very slowly over time. And it gets you from 1 centimeter to 4 centimeters. But they checked me. And when I showed up for the induction, I was already at 4. And I sobbed because I didn't have to get the Foley balloon. Thanks so much, Scott.
It was a happy cry, though. And I was very familiar with the different types of crying at this point. I was like very happy to see you crying about the not having to get the Foley balloon. That was a big step in the right direction that day.
Then you guys tell the what happened, Adam, after the 4 centimeters, no Foley balloon. I think they gave me a teeny bit of Pitocin to like jumpstart and it shit. Oh, then she broke her own water. That's what happened.
Yes. Your water broke at 1 a.m.
Oh my God. And I checked in at 10, guys. And by the time everything was hooked up and checked in, everything was like 11:30. My water broke at 1. She broke it herself. A lot of times at an induction, you can say this, Rebecca, but they'll come in with like a sewing needle.
More like a knitting.
That's what I mean.
Not a sewing needle.
I mean a knitting needle.
Plastic, kind of.
Mm-hmm. And they will burst your water for you. But she did it on her own. I remember what it was. I just remembered. It felt like someone had punched me in my bum hole from the inside. You're welcome, guys. All of a sudden, when they say it's a lot of liquid, it is a lot of liquid, people. Like, you're on these
chucks.
Wee wee pads that you would use for like potty training a dog inside. And it is endless amounts of fluids. It's so gross. I don't like it. I'm not into it. Like,
but it feels like a nice release, doesn't it?
Yes. It feels like a nice relief. She did that on her own. And then what happened?
Right after your water broke, you got your epidural.
I can be as supportive as possible, but if there's one thing I need to know is a 10-minute alert for when the epidural starts.
And why is that, Adam?
I do not like needles. I don't like to see the needle. I certainly don't like to see the needle going into anything.
Right. Adam's a fainter, y'all. Adam is a fainter.
But at that point, yeah. I wasn't there, actually. I hadn't gotten there yet. And so did you end up supporting her during the epidural?
I said, somebody let me know when the epidural guy's coming. I'm just going to go take a little walk. It was what, 3 a.m?
It was 1:30.
I don't know what I did, but I just got out of there for a few minutes.
Well, because it was a pandemic, you couldn't go anywhere. You weren't allowed in the hall, so you probably hung out in the bathroom is my guess. Because you couldn't go anywhere.
That's right.
I don't know what you did,
They
Adam.
Weren't letting you go out of the room.
I think you did go to the bathroom.
They weren't letting us out of the room at all.
I think you just hung out in the bathroom.
And just checked my Instagram or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Once my water broke, the contractions really, really picked up. And they were painful. Like, I did not like what was going on. I'm like one of those where I'm like, I do want to feel the contractions and I want to feel how amazing it is that my body's doing it. And I felt all that. And then I'm also like, okay, I don't like this anymore. I want it to stop. You know, like that's me. Every woman makes their own choice about how long they want to do that for or if they want to see it all the way through. But I called for the epidural and I remember having the contractions while it takes about 20, 30 minutes to place the epidural. So you're having contractions while they're doing it. For people listening who are pregnant, I'm holding the hands of the nurse and I'm saying, I'm being very communicative, like, okay, I feel another one coming on. And they say, okay, we're going to stop doing the work. We're going to stop placing it. Just let us know when it starts to taper off. And it would come, the contractions would come. And then I would say, okay, it's tapering off. And then they would get back to work. And I would do that while I would not move my body and just take all the pain out on the lovely hands of the nurse while I was squeezing the shit out of them. And then slowly but surely, relief starts to come and the pain starts to fade away. And I think, Rebecca, is that when you came?
Yeah, I was there right after that happened. Mm-hmm.
So right after that happened, you got me on my side and it was taking a little bit of time for the epidural to really take. I was having a lot of pain in one hip. And then Rebecca, the pain subsided and Rebecca put me in something I will never forget. You put me in something called goddess pose. Explain what that is.
It's actually throne position.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I will never forget it. I'll never forget exactly what it was called.
I felt like a goddess in a throne.
As you should. It's a goddess throne-like position. And basically, it's very simple. All it is the back of the hospital bed gets all the way brought upright. The foot end of the hospital bed drops down and we prop your arms up like you've got armrests, like you're sitting in a throne. And gravity just tends to really help so much in that position to bring baby down to get more activity. And so we did leave you there for quite a while. That position worked well for you.
Oh my God, throne was amazing. I felt like I was sitting like I would be in a meditation seat. Yeah. Like it felt very meditative. I remember my eyes being shut. I remember feeling very connected to Vera, like we're in the final throes of this. I love you. We've got this. I was saying all of these things to her and the pain had gone. How long was I in throne pose for?
We typically leave you in each position for about 20 to 30 minutes, depending. We like to keep moving you around when you have an epidural. So I'm guessing you were there maybe 30 minutes. Sometimes we leave you there a little longer if baby's tolerating it okay, as she was. So you might have been there for a while before we put you back onto your side. And the other reason that position is great is because it levels out the pressure on each side of your pelvis. So whatever pain you were having, your body could get to a very centered, anatomical, neutral, if you will, kind of position.
And then somebody checked me and said, it's time to call the doctor.
Yeah.
At what time? I don't even know. Guys, just to give you reference, the whole thing was 3 hours.
I didn't even have time to vibe out the room.
You know.
This was such a different birthing experience. And with Albie, we had lights up and the Sonos playing, and we knew exactly the song we wanted queued up when Albie came out. I mean, Vera's birth was so fast. The 3 hours, it was like, okay, now we're doing this. Now we're doing this. Now it's this part. Now it's this part. And I'm like, what? We're already at this part? Like, I couldn't even, the 30 minutes in throne pose was the only time I felt labor. Everything else was just like, quickly checking things off the list. And it was like, holy shit, we're already at this part. We're already at 7. We're already at 8. We're already at 10. We're already at face. We're already like, it just felt like a speeding train.
You had a list and you just kept saying to me, all right, just 4 more shit shows to go. And then we're all through this. And then
oh, God. You
were like, all right,
I'm the worst.
You're like, we got through 8 of the shit shows and I'm fine. And now we just have 3 more shit shows before this baby comes out.
I'm so embarrassed. embarrassed for all of you people listening. This is so embarrassing. And it's why I'm so glad you're both here, because I have to be held accountable for the person I was throughout this. And I can't even, like, this is insane. So I'm such a list maker. I'm such a type A person that I was like, if everything goes according to my plan, which we can't plan anything, but.
No, you said there was going to be, there's 8 things that I'm cool with. And then there's like 10 things that suck.
COVID test brain scratcher was like 1. Then it would be like hep lock getting inserted is 2.
The COVID test.
Oh, fuck you, Adam. Adam was like asking me all these fucking questions during my COVID test.
I was filling out paperwork, which I'm terrible at doing. For some reason, I could answer any question, whatever. But when it comes to paperwork, I just like, well, I don't know any of these answers. And I kept asking Katie, like, hey, what's the last 4 of your social, or whatever the thing was.
Yeah, he was asking me the last 4 of my social while the COVID thing was literally scratching my brain, like above my eyebrow.
I just never looked up from the paper, and I didn't realize Katie was in the middle of a brain scratcher. And she was like, yeah. Adam, just let me do my thing, and you fill out the paperwork. And I was like, got it. Cool. Got it.
But all the shit shows was like, I think, I don't remember, but there was like 8 or 10 of them. And it was like COVID test, hep lock,
Foley balloon.
Foley balloon, Pitocin.
Epidural.
Water breaking, epidural, making it to 10 centimeters, pushing baby out, right? So it was like 8 shit shows or something like that.
The 8 shit show checklist for pregnancy, for labor and delivery. By really?
Ridiculous.
We should add that to the Passover Seder.
I am so embarrassed that we are sharing this with you listeners. But for some reason, that was how my brain had to organize all the scary things I needed to face to get the baby there. And what was so insane and what no one saw coming was that what I didn't want to add to the shit show was like last minute C-section, vacuum, heartbeat dropping. Like I knew because of this podcast, I know a lot of information and I know that there are other options on this shit show list. Okay. Like I knew. And if they needed to happen in order for Vera and me to get out safely, of course, we would have checked those off too. But from what I knew and from the pregnancy and labor I had had with Albie, those were the shit shows I had known before, and I was hoping for those shit shows again and for not any new shit shows. The good news was with Vera that the shit shows were going way faster and the Foley balloon was already taken off the table.
Like, yeah, you were through it. You were through it.
But that is so funny that that is what I called them and that was my list. I'm so fucking mortified. Okay.
Well, you should actually be really proud that you're getting that out there, because women shouldn't only think that they're supposed to feel glorious and happy and, you know, maternal and all in their divine feminine during pregnancy and childbirth. It can be a shit show for sure. Yeah, you were. You needed it to be done.
I felt it enthroned. I did. I felt that connection.
I know someplace else that you might have been feeling it. I don't know what you were feeling, but there was a moment that I wrote down in our text exchanges when I was checking in with you guys the next day, and I acknowledged how you and Adam, oh, I feel emotional right now, how you and Adam locked eyes for a moment and you started crying. And I wrote to you guys and I said, I loved that moment where you and Adam locked eyes. There are beautiful things in all of the shit shows, the moments in between the shit shows that are real, beautiful, bonding, connected. And certainly for me, being with you a second time, like being with a family for a second time and seeing and knowing that Albie's little sister was going to be born. And there's a lot of beautiful little moments too in between the shit show. But you, I also, in my follow-up text to you, acknowledging, you said, I cannot believe how much I cried during this whole process. I cried. So much. And yeah,
I cried so much. It was so, it was just like, in all honesty, it was just a real struggle for me for whatever reasons, all the reasons. It just really was. And her labor was not, it was not a physical struggle for me. Once I got through the shit show list and what was left was the pushing and the sewing up. But like, once I got to 10 centimeters in a face, which, by the way, again, 2.5 hours later, this is going so fast. And my only respite was just that 30-minute meditation, which was glorious. And then they said, okay, you ready to push? Adam, Rebecca, how many times did I push? And what was it like?
I don't remember. Maybe
six times.
Yeah, I was going to say six. I think it was about six pushes. Yeah.
Maybe six pushes.
That's the number I had in my head.
And Rebecca said, don't scrunch your face, which was the best reminder ever because I was wasting energy by scrunching my face and instead of pushing all of my energy down to my vagina and butt. And Adam was up by my side. Rebecca had one leg. The nurse had the other leg. And my OB was in between my legs. And what was so amazing about COVID is that was it. It's a very small team right now that is even allowed to be there. And Adam, I remember you whispering in my ear, like, one more, you've got this. Something like that, right? Adam, yeah. Do you remember that?
I was like, this is happening way faster than with Albie. I was really confident that the baby was going to come out in a minute or two. And I could see more than you could see. So I knew that at one point too. So it was nice to be able to tell you, this is going to happen right now. And know that it was happening right now.
Yeah. And then my OB said, which was the coolest moment of my life, which we never discussed and was not part of my birth plan, but wow.
Didn't even know it was an option.
I didn't even know it was an option. My OB says to me, grab her, grab her, grab her. And Vera was halfway out, right, Rebecca?
Yeah. She said, reach down and pull your baby up. Yeah.
And I felt with my own hands, my daughter, oh my God, I'm going to get emotional, but I felt my daughter leave my body and bring her up to my chest. And I looked down at her. I mean, I was like, it was such a metaphor. I mean, it was such a, like, it was like this pregnancy. My doctor said, grab her, grab her. And my initial reaction was fear, like I had been feeling the whole time. And I just like locked eyes with her and put my hands underneath her little arms and felt the second half of her body leave me and then threw her onto my own chest. And it was the coolest thing I have ever done in my life and probably will be the coolest thing I ever do in my whole life. And then she was here. I was so out of body. Like, do you guys remember? Were we crying? Like, what was it like? I don't even remember.
We can guarantee you were crying. Adam might have had some tears and I think I probably was crying too. I'm in love with your whole family. Mm-hmm. I get emotional when I'm really connected to the people I'm with. So I'm certain that I was crying. And also what you had been through and the pandemic and all the, if I could even be with you and the fact that we were actually able to
until a couple of weeks before weren't even allowed in the room. You were doing a lot of Zoom virtual dueling with other clients.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I was crying too.
I was kind of mind blown. I was not expecting to watch Katie pull the baby out of herself. I was pretty ready for this all to happen. And then when that curveball happened, I think I was silent for a good 5 minutes after that, kind of processing what I just witnessed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was also, we were thrown because she was like 8 pounds, 6 ounces. She was like a big, beautiful, round baby. And also for you guys listening, like what used to be my huge first fear with Albie was the stitch up. If you do tear, and I have with both babies, not a big tear, but little ones, my OB gets to work on that like in the minute after you meet your baby. So you literally don't give a shit. Like your baby just came out of your vagina, your baby's on your chest, if all has gone okay. And they immediately just get to work doing the quick like sutures and the stitches. So you do not care. And because I had an epidural, I didn't feel anything. I don't know if you don't have an epidural, if you don't feel it, probably because you're in just so much love meeting your child for the first time and you're so distracted. I don't know.
Ish.
Well, you have to get a shot, right? Like a local anesthesia shot.
They'll give you a little shot and some numbing spray. But yes, you definitely feel it if there's no epidural. A little bit.
So we meet our daughter. It happened in no time at all. And I feel just so like the moral of the story being like, God, yes, 2020 was an unexpected year and even unexpected in how positive and glorious and magical Vera's birth was.
You did it. You got to the Thanksgiving table.
We had a good like half hour at that table, wouldn't you say, Katie?
Yes, because...
Just keeping it real.
Oh, yeah. Like keeping it real. What I had been working towards so much in the pregnancy was just get Vera here. And as soon as she gets here, I had other friends that were pregnant during the pandemic alongside with me. And they had all told me that once the baby was here, that their anxiety and fears diminished basically down to zero. And that's what I was hoping for, that I just had to make it cross the finish line to bringing her here. And what I slowly, over the next 4 to 6 weeks, realized after Vera had been here was that my experience took a 180 from my friends' experiences, and my anxiety and depression got worse instead of better. And that's when we knew I had to get more help. And Rebecca, again,
jumped in.
Was one of my first texts and jumped in, giving me a plethora of other moms who had been diagnosed with postpartum depression and anxiety who were on medication or not on medication or had been doing different things so that I had other moms who were ahead of me that I could talk to.
And just ahead of you, like their meds
just ahead of me.
Just kicked in a week prior or 2 weeks prior. It was a run of that at that time, probably because of the pandemic, but who knows?
Yes. And also Rebecca being like, me being like, I think something's wrong. I'm thinking about Zoloft, and Rebecca being like, here are all the moms I know that have been diagnosed with postpartum depression who are on Zoloft, who are breastfeeding, who are da da da. And I'm going to put you in touch with them so you can ask them a billion questions about their experience and blah, blah, blah. And so really, you've been our doula for life. And as you can tell, I think you can both attest, since getting help and Vera being here, I am doing much better. What do you think, Adam?
Oh, yes.
Very happy. Enjoying motherhood, enjoying your family, enjoying seeing Albie bond with his little sister, and enjoying watching all of her little brand new baby changes to develop into who she is. You would have been missing that. That's a really good reason to get support, because it goes by very fast.
And also to enjoy, right, like you said, enjoying motherhood. But also for women who are listening, I get this question a lot. Like, if you're really anxious and mentally struggling during your pregnancy, how does that affect the baby? And here's what I can tell you. I have a 4-month-old who is the least anxious, chillest, best sleeping, joyous, smiley baby. So I don't know if it's because I was so anxious and fucked up during her pregnancy, but I joke around saying, like, fate, God, whatever you want to call it, she knew what the world was that she was being born into and what her mother could handle. And so Vera is very, I hate to say the word EASY because I'm scared to knock on wood everywhere, but you listening, you guys get me, you get me. What else? Do you guys have any other last tips or pieces of advice for our audience? Oh, I'll go first. Breastfeeding. If you are going to try to breastfeed, a lot of times the birth is traumatic for a baby and a big change. And so they encourage a baby to go right to the nipple, right? Like after.
Yeah, always.
Oh, great. Okay. After childbirth. And Vera was screaming at my breast and would not take to it very easily. And I was already freaking out because, as you guys know, who've listened to Katie's Crib and listening to the breastfeeding episode with Linda Hanna, a lactation consultant, you would know that I had a really hard time breastfeeding Albie and my nipples fell off. So I was already freaking out. But it only took a few days and she's a champion breastfeeder and it all went fine.
Perfect. Yeah.
So that's to anyone listening. Just know if breastfeeding is hard, even in the first try, the second try, the third try in the hospital delivery room or over the next few days in the hospital or when you first get home, that's okay. Even with a second baby, Vera had to learn how to do it. And it had been 2 years since I had do it. And I had to relearn how to do it. I had like forgotten how to hold a newborn and breastfeed. Like I didn't remember football hold or, and I was like, fuck that. I'm not looking it up. Like I breastfed for a year. I'm an expert. No, I had to relearn all over again.
Yeah. I mentioned this earlier, a lot of highlighting of Adam during this. And it makes me think in general about the importance of honoring and highlighting the support people, whether it's a husband, another partner. I've recently supported some single women who don't have anybody, so I was that person, but to really just highlight and honor the people that are standing alongside the women in labor that are doing the hardest thing, going through this emotional roller coaster in a pandemic. Adam, you were a role model for how to be a support person. You didn't get many breaks. I know that because I kept checking in with you that you didn't get a lot of breaks, and you stayed the course. You were there all the way through.
God, this whole podcast is making me really want to have a date night.
Ooh!
Look out. It's like podcast over. Adam, meet me in the bedroom in 10 minutes.
Wow. Rebecca said to me early on in the thing, do something for Katie that's just so different and get her out. You can't get her out of the house, but just find a place in the backyard that you haven't sat in together. And so
that was our date night in his art shack?
In the garage.
That was Rebecca's idea?
So I put all those candles in the garage and music. And I was like, Katie, I need you to come outside. And you were like, no, I don't want to go outside. Oh, I just want to cry. And then and the date was awesome. And even though it was only 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes we were out there, I think you were like, okay, this was super sweet and I loved it and thank you and here's a kiss. I got to go to bed. But even those 15, 20 minutes, we both still remember those 15.
Yeah.
I think it definitely is a testament to the power of, okay, you don't have a babysitter and a whole night to have a huge date night and see a show and see dinner, have dinner at a fancy restaurant. It's a testament to what just 5 minutes, the difference 5 minutes can make.
Adam and Rebecca, I want to thank you guys for being there for me through the whole shit show.
I want to thank Rebecca too.
Thank you.
And we love you so much.
Oh, you guys, I love you so much. Any amount of time I ever get with either of you, both of you, any of you in your household is just precious to me. I was listening to you guys earlier and I was thinking, gosh, I should have dueled them before their first night on Broadway. I should have come up with something to like
honestly
walk them through. I could have done like Reiki through the phone or something, but
that's actually a really good point for future shit shows.
Yeah.
A Broadway doula is an amazing idea.
I love you both so much and I support you always in anything that you do. And it was my honor to be there for both the births of your beautiful children.
Oh my God. I feel so lucky.
And also, this is like the official postpartum visit that now I can finally close your file.
Close the file!
Close the file on the Shapiro family for now.
No, forever. Okay. That's a close. Unless we get a new dog in like 10 years or a bird or a fish or a turtle or whatever the kiddos want. I'm just like, I can't even.
Love you, Katie.
I love you so much. There are no words to say. Thank you guys for listening to Katie's Crib. I want to hear from you, you guys. We're in season 4. What do you want to talk about? What guests do you want to have on? Do you have questions? Do you have comments? Hit me up. katiescrib@shondaland.com. Bye-bye. Katie's Crib is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.